You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, I guarantee you, we're going to discuss a subject unique to intelligent medicine. Very likely you've never heard about this before. We're going to talk to an innovator in the field of self-empowerment for women via home testing. You've heard of home test kits for stool analysis. The stool microbiome can tell us a lot about health. We're recognizing how crucial it is to all aspects of health. But there are other aspects of our microbiome that can tell a story. And in particular, when it comes to women, the vaginal microbiome can tell us a lot about the state of health of women, not just alleviate vaginal discomfort, but can be a key to understanding a lot about reproductive health and overall health. Today, our guest is Pita Navarro. She is the co-founder and chief science officer at Evi. Evi is an outfit that does home testing of the vaginal microbiome. Evi is a molecular biologist by training with deep passion for driving the translation of scientific discoveries into technologies that can improve outcomes and empower women to live healthier lives. She's an entrepreneur scientist, and her biotech startup experience spans across research development and commercialization of novel tech diagnostics like Evi and digital health tools. So it is with great pleasure that I introduce Pita Navarro. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation because this is indeed opening up an exciting new frontier for women's health.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Hoffman. It's truly an honor to be on this podcast.
Oh, it's with great pleasure. So, Evi, tell us a little bit about the path that led you to develop as co-founder and how you became the chief science officer at Evi.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think if you talk to any woman today, I think we all have our own version of mystery symptoms, mystery diagnoses. And I think especially in the age of AI and healthcare and precision medicine, there is such a glaring problem, right? Which is that women were not included in clinical research until 1993. So essentially what that means is precision medicine simply cannot exist for women unless we build the diverse, comprehensive data sets to power it. And so initially, when we set out to build a company in women's health, we talked to a lot of doctors, we talked to a lot of patients, what is the most frustrating problem? What prevents you from having access to the best care? And a lot of it stemmed from doctors saying, there's not enough data to know how to treat this, or a lot of diagnoses are by exclusion or have the word syndrome attached to it, right? Which is essentially saying all these symptoms present together. We don't necessarily understand why. For example, ovarian cancer. Why are 80% of cases caught in stage 4? So all of this pointed to this massive data gap. And when we were doing a lot of research on, why does this keep happening? Patients are frustrated. Providers are frustrated. We came down to the fact that you know, we've just not really properly studied the female body. And so before creating a company that scaled access to the standard of care, for example, helped women get diagnostics or treatments, we wanted to make sure that we weren't scaling access to a broken system, to a broken standard of care. And all that led to us thinking about data, right? We need to create data. We need to work with women to create data because they know their bodies more than any study has ever looked into them. And so all of this pointed to this really amazing and unique opportunity to harness all of those signals that the female body is constantly giving off that we really completely ignore in our definitions of health and disease. So we thought if we could measure and track these signals, we could finally do a much better job at predicting risk, diagnosing and treating these diseases as they uniquely manifest in the female body. And so that's what we set out to build, really a platform to finally unlock this precision care, looking into what are all of those markers, one, that have been overlooked, and two, how can we build a platform while we're studying these overlooked biomarkers that we can also discover new markers of health and disease. And we started with the vaginal microbiome, which I'm sure we will go into, but that was essentially how we got to Evvi and the idea behind Evvi.
Well, the current state of the art is that it's problem-oriented. Women have vaginal problems. They have vaginal itch, burning, pain on intercourse. They have a discharge that is sometimes odorous. It's a source of concern. Maybe they've had, you know, contact with a sexual partner where they're uncertain about their status. And so they go to the gynecologist, and the gynecologist does do a pelvic exam and obtains a specimen. But basically, it's not about optimization. It's about, do you have an STD? Do you have gonorrhea, herpes? Do you have vaginal dysbiosis? Do you have a yeast infection? And if you don't, they basically say, you're okay. But this is different, right? This is not just about, I mean, you will pick up these types of things, but it's more about optimization and prevention, right?
Right. So if you think about all of those reasons that you mentioned that patients go to the gynecologist for, vaginal discomfort being the leading reason why women seek healthcare advice, about 90% of those cases can be attributed to the vaginal microbiome. And that's when we start experiencing yeast infections, recurrent UTIs, bacterial vaginosis. And so I think the way we diagnose them right now, when women go to the doctor, they're more likely to get misdiagnosed than correctly diagnosed. Statistically, and they're more likely to recur than to get better. So there's both a problem with the diagnosis and the treatment of these conditions. The way we diagnose, it's really binary, right? You either have this infection or you don't. You either need broad spectrum antibiotics or you don't. When we're not really paying attention to what is the community, why does this patient keep recurring? Does throwing a broad spectrum antibiotic really get rid of the problem? Or, you know, will the microbiome just go back to the setting that it was that is potentially associated with the recurrent? And so I think then in the diagnosis too, the criteria we use is very rudimentary. It's essentially you leverage the microscope, which a lot of doctors aren't using anymore. And then it's doing, you know, does it smell? Which is pretty much offensive with all of the amazing technology we have in sequencing capacity to know, you know, who is there, what bacteria is there. We now have, you know, technology to understand what strains of bacteria, what are they doing? What's the functional potential? Yet when we go to the doctor, you know, the diagnosis criteria is smelling. And that leads to treatment that is most likely going to recur, right? And not really.
It's very reflexive. In other words, it's like, you know, is it yeast? Oh, you know, is it a bacterial infection? There are not a lot of options.
Right. And like, what about not just in the microbiome, but what about the host? What about the patient is contributing, right? So are they diabetic? You know, do they have longer periods? Are their hormones regulated? Do they have low estrogen, high estrogen? What are all of the factors contributing to these conditions that we're right now not really taking into account?
How is the vaginal microbiome under assault? Because we know from studies of the GI, the gastrointestinal microbiome, that our microbiomes are lack diversity. You know, diversity is something that If anthropologists go to so-called primitive or indigenous cultures, they have much more diversity in their GI tracts. Does the same hold true for women in industrialized Western countries?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. In the vaginal microbiome, it tends to be the opposite of the gut microbiome. So in the gut microbiome, the more diversity you have, essentially, the stronger your immunity is, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have a lot more variations of bacteria. And in the vaginal microbiome, it's actually the opposite, which makes it actually a lot more clinically translational because we know, we have a better idea of what optimal and suboptimal is.
Okay.
And we can deviate from like that. Essentially, if you're dominated by a bacteria called lactobacillus, then you're essentially under an optimal state because that bacteria is producing lactic acid. It's taking up space in the vaginal wall, preventing pathogenic bacteria from seeding and going upstream to causing havoc. And so we essentially see if you're dominated by lactobacilli, you're theoretically optimal. And then once you start experiencing diversity, then that's when actually you're more at risk for recurrent infections and potentially even, you know, IVF failure, cervical cancer, progression, all these associations that are now being recently published. So we have a better idea of, you know, optimal, suboptimal, and it's almost easier to want to, we know where we need to shift people to, rather in the gut, it's harder to make these associations because it's so diverse.
So it sounds like Evie is a work in progress because with your background in data science, what you do is you utilize artificial intelligence, machine learning to take a large language base or a large database and correlate it with outcomes or symptoms. And so there's a research process, there's a learning process, there's a refinement that goes along with this. Because frankly, I mean, if I were to look at a report of the vaginal flora of a woman, I would say, well, this is good, this is bad, this is not sort of, this doesn't, I mean, smoke would start coming out of my ears. I could not process all that information, right?
Yes, there is a lot of research happening right now at Evie. And I think, you know, one of the first thing we do when someone purchases a test is ask if they would like to consent to be part of our research protocol. And we've actually been so surprised. We have about 98% of our customers opt in to our research program. And I think that just speaks to women being so frustrated by the lack of answers that they have. And so we're constantly looking at, you know, we know this about some bacteria. There's some bacteria that we know are protective or they're disruptive or they're variable, meaning they're found sometimes in infection sometimes in healthy patients. What we're trying to find is how can we establish or have a better understanding of a stable microbiome, have a better understanding of optimal and suboptimal microbiomes across different race and ethnicities, really understand, you know, how are people responding to treatment?
So that's an interesting nuance, is that it may differ according to one's ethnic or racial background, that there may be characteristics that are unique and not just across the board among females. And certainly age-related, of course, yes.
Definitely age-related. Most of the studies have been focused on women of reproductive age because the risks associated with dysbiosis tend to be more of women of reproductive age. And but we do see, for example, one of the first prediction algorithms we were able to build is, can we predict whether someone is in menopause or not just by using microbiome?
Wow.
Not even, and we were able to reach prediction accuracy of 0.98. And that's because the microbiome is very related to estrogen. So estrogen, glycogen, and the healthy bacteria need glycogen in order to thrive. And so we actually see very different microbiomes in menopause versus women of reproductive age. And I think that's a study that we're really excited to hopefully publish, which is, you know, what is an optimal microbiome in menopause? Because maybe it would technically look like dysbiosis or look like an infection, but it could be all okay because, you know, if the patient. But there's definitely variations across ethnicities where, you know, Hispanic and Black women tend to be dominated by they tend to have more dysbiosis or dominated by lactobacilli inners, which is kind of a variable, not as protective lactobacilli. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely a genetic component as well as a culture component, I would say, just in terms of, you know, using products, sexual practices. So it's really deciphering in terms of, is this variation due to race and ethnicity from a genetic perspective or from cultural norms?
So why would it matter? Why would a woman be prompted to do this test? You know, perhaps if they're unhappy about what's happening down below, they may want to discover why they're having frequent urinary tract infections, vaginal discomfort, pain in intercourse, et cetera, et cetera. Is it worthy of inquiry for the average woman to get her vaginal microbiome assessed? Is there news that they can use?
Yeah, great question. I would say about 70% of our customers are customers who have experienced infection or vaginal symptoms at least once. We are seeing a really interesting set of customers who are actually proactively testing and wanting to learn more, whether they're going through the fertility journey, whether conceiving, you know, when you go to the doctor and they say, you know, this is the checklist of things you have to do. A lot of women are now coming to us saying, well, I should probably check my vaginal microbiome. And we're doing a lot of education. And one thing that I think we found great success in is really treating our customers, you know, like they're treating women like they're smart, right? Telling them, this is what we know, this is what we don't know. So it's not that you're not experiencing it or it's not a possibility, but we just haven't taken the time to understand it.
You don't want to be over your skis in terms of making prognostications or discussing the implications of things that we don't really understand yet.
Right, not at all. And we've been very transparent. And I think that messaging has really resonated with women, right? Because previously, I think it's mostly saying like, you don't have anything. And now we're saying, you know.
It's a binary. In other words, it's you have something or you're fine. There's got to be shades of gray in between levels of optimal.
Exactly. So even just telling them, for example, like, we don't necessarily understand the cause or the association, but there's actually a lot of women on our platform that are experiencing this. And even that, I think, provides a lot of comfort instead of women suffering in silos.
So there's an extensive questionnaire that goes along with the sample, right? Women obtain a sample. First of all, is it important to do the sample for premenopausal women on a certain part of the cycle? Or are they urged to do it on, you know, day 21 of the cycle, for example?
Yeah, I would say it depends on what you're trying to learn from the test, right? If you have symptoms, really figuring out what does your microbiome look like when you have these symptoms? And then what does it look like when you don't have these symptoms so that we can maybe tell when you're transitioning in and out before it's a full-blown infection. For women of perimenopause, there's not really that many tests out there that can help them understand, you know, do I have a cold or is this perimenopause or what is going on with my body? And so I think given that the microbiome is very sensitive to hormonal changes, it's just more informative, right? So it's just more information. If you think about, you know, information about our bodies, other than a pap smear every 3 years, there's not a lot. And, you know, the standard CBC or hormone panel, there's not really additional information. Women find us as, I want to know more about my body.
Do you find that, do you actually question the people about their diets? Is there a diet component to this? Because certainly there is a diet component to yeast infections. I notice with my patients who have frequent yeast infections, we recommend a very low sugar, sometimes a very low carb diet. Even fruit sometimes sets them off.
Right. Yes, we actually just updated our questionnaire to include a lot more lifestyle and behavioral questions, including stress, diet. We're very excited to see any new trends that we're spotting in our customers.
Right. So to explain how this AI or large language model works, you're going to be just kind of neutral, a neutral observer, and be totally a scientist and see where the data leads you to see if associations can be found among a multiplicity of factors with outcomes, right?
Right, exactly. So if you think about what 23andMe did, basically saying, you know, we basically found this is correlated to cilantro or, you know, Alzheimer's disease. Those are the types of associations.
Cilantro, the soapy taste or the not soapy taste kind of thing, right? Yeah, some people love it, some people hate it, you know, that whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's everything from, you know, recurrent infections to hopefully maybe we find novel microbial signatures that help figure out, you know, whether someone has endometriosis or not. And so right now we're taking a very unbiased approach and what are we seeing? And then we will definitely most likely validate the findings in a clinical study.
Okay. So this is a project that is really worthy of years and decades of observation. Hopefully it'll be a robust scientific project that will yield some real outcome data in terms of, you know, sometimes potentially consequential outcomes, such as cancer. But short of that, there's lots of practical information that women can derive from that. Do you screen for HPV? Is that part of that?
Well, right now we have an STI panel that customers can add on, but that has for gonorrhea, trichomydia, and mycoplasma genitalium.
Because I understand that one of the innovations around screening for pre-cancer, you know, to replace the pap smear, one of the big obstacles, the pap smear is only as good as if you get to the office and undergo the sometimes uncomfortable examination. And so one of the things that I think FDA is now authorizing is a home test for, actually a home pap smear. But that may not be, you know, you may actually have to angle for approval of that separately because another outfit may be authorized to have gone through the FDA process and has been authorized to do that. But maybe that's an eventual add-on, an accoutrement to this test, which would be a great service to women who, you know, sometimes can't manage to get to the gynecologist to get a test.
No, I think that would be great for us to offer. I think what we want to make sure that we can offer if we have that test is also follow-up care.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what's blocking us from having an HPV test right now.
Yeah, when you talk to your legal department, it's actually undertaking some degree of liability because it's kind of like, okay, yeah, you know, we just told you that you have potentially high, you know, cytology or, you know, HPV, which puts you at high risk for cervical cancer. Have a nice life.
And yes, exactly.
It could come back to haunt the patient, but haunt you. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I think that gets in the way of innovation, I think, is, but, you know, yeah, I get it. Okay, great stuff. Our listeners know that we divide our podcast into two parts. And in part two, I want to talk a little bit more about the implications of the vaginal microbiome and how an innovative home test can shed light on current problems or even looming problems for women. I think it's a great empowerment tool. And Peter Navarro, our guest today, a co-founder and chief science officer at Evi, is at the forefront of this revolution. Peter, give us the heads up on Evi. Is it evivvy.com? Is that people where can find it?
Evi, yes. Evi is perfect.
Okay, good. And what are the resources? There's quite a lot of information there. What are the resources that people can find there?
On our website, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, there's an educational blog that we spend a lot of time medically reviewing it, scientifically reviewing it. And so definitely the blog is an amazing...
Yeah, I'm subscribed to it. It's quite informative. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. And then they can buy a test. And once they get results from the test, then there's also the option to potentially receive prescription treatment.
Oh, okay. Well, so we'll talk about that in part two. I think that's interesting. All right. Our subject, the Evi test for the vaginal microbiome, something whose time has come. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, our guest, Peter Navarro, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.